Welcome to Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson with our host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And today we're winding the clock back to enjoy a classic program between my dad and Michael Reagan, the adopted son of the late President Ronald Reagan. Over the past 30 years, my dad has interviewed thousands of guests on many different topics, and a lot of those broadcasts are full of evergreen content that is still relevant today, and this program is no exception. Statistics on sexual abuse in the United States are horrifying. Unfortunately, the subject of sexual abuse is much too common in our world and culture. According to the United States Department of Justice, research shows that 1 in 6 boys and 1 in 4 girls are sexually abused before the age of 18. 34% of children who are abused are younger than 9 years of age. Teenagers between the ages of 16 and 19 are 3.5 times more likely to become the victims of rape, attempted rape, or sexual assault than any other segment. The stats of who the perpetrators are shows a wide range of social roles, but consistently points to someone trusted by the victim. In other words, it's actually rare that someone is a victim of rape or abuse by a complete stranger. It's much more common for a coach, teacher, youth pastor, or other leader, someone who's in a trusted leadership role, to abuse one of the children they're responsible for. It is an absolute tragedy that it goes on as much as it does in the United States. And this was the case with our guest today. A few years ago, my dad interviewed Michael Reagan, who was sexually molested at a camp by a counselor at a very young age. And as you can imagine, this event dramatically impacted his life, and he kept it a secret for years. In our last program, he shared with us that when he was young, he attended a camp, and one of the camp counselors was responsible for dropping boys off back at home after camp. He would always drop Michael off last after he had taken advantage of him. Today, we're going to pick up the story where we left off last time. So here is Michael Reagan and my dad on today's classic edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Our guest again today is Michael Reagan. He is, of course, the adopted son of Ronald Reagan and Jane Wyman, and he's the host of the Michael Reagan radio talk show, which is now heard on nearly 200 stations across the country and in the internet. He's a man that I've listened to from afar. I said yesterday that he rides home with me on many afternoons. And, of course, we've had Michael on the radio program here. Michael, it is always good to have you here, and I'm delighted that you're with us again.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. I really do appreciate it.
You talked yesterday about your very troubled childhood, the fact that you were in a home of some very, very busy and popular people in Hollywood who were in demand. They didn't have time much for their kids and didn't get around to affirming you. You were adopted and you felt like you didn't belong, like your own family didn't love you, even though you've found since that they did. And then that led to a vulnerability to a pedophile who abused you when you were 8 years of age. How long did that go on?
Went on for a year. Actually, sexually abused me for a year, and took the photos, you know, of me, and then had me develop the photo, and told me, you know, when your mother liked to have a copy. And that night, he sexually, after he had me do the photo, and put his arm on my right shoulder and said, "When your mother liked to have a copy," I mean, I almost went like catatonic. But he sexually abused me again that night. But I couldn't tell you how I got home that night. I couldn't tell you from that point on.
The emotional abuse was worse than the physical abuse.
I didn't know who I was, where I was, and all I know is I was absolutely scared to death that somebody's going to find out about it, and the world would come to an end for all intents and purposes. I started to think, that maybe my birth mother must have known inherently there was something wrong, and that's why she gave me up. And I was so fearful of telling my mom that when she found out, she would also give me up. I was just afraid. I was just so terribly, terribly afraid. I just didn't want somebody to give me up again. And so I didn't know what to do. I just, it's really interesting, though. My personality comes from the man who sexually abused me, meaning that a lot of people say, well, you're affable and all these things. I mean, I started that personality just to hide from everybody. just to kind of like, hi, old Mike's happy-go-lucky. Mm-hmm. And I cry myself to sleep at night. You know, I went to boarding school, St. John's Military Academy, in fifth grade, and I was horrific bedwetter. I used to wet the bed every single night, just the dreams I would have. But I could hide it because I became an altar boy. Hmm. An altar boy, see, could get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and serve 6 o'clock Mass. And if you got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, there was nobody else in that dorm. It was stupid enough to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Hmm. So I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, change my sheets, throw the wet ones away, and go serve Mass at 6. And everybody thought, what a great kid. He's serving Mass at 6 o'clock. What a great Catholic boy he is. Not knowing I was only doing that to hide the wetting of the bed.
So much of your childhood was focused on coping with, or trying to cope with, and not very well, this tragedy in your life. John, what just absolutely breaks my heart? I mean, of all the things that are going on out there that affect families and especially children, this scourge of child pornography that's out there, where these men have access to these images. You know, a good part of your story centered around a photograph, Michael, but there are millions of them that are out there, and they have a way of exchanging them with other pedophiles. They take them of their neighbor kids and others, and then find a way to market them, even though that's illegal. And the more of that stuff that's out there, the more men will get hooked on it, and the more children like Michael are going to be abused. It's a horrible thing. And if this country is committed to anything, it ought to be stamping that out in just about every way. The virtual child pornography is, in other words, you can make virtual depictions of children, and the Supreme Court said that it does exactly the same thing.
I have so many times called back to Washington. I love to testify as a child who was the picture in child pornography. Anytime you want to have me back, I can't get myself invited back to Washington to testify before these committees. I get tired of people who are telling me what they, you know, I know child pornography when I see it. I know child pornography because I was child pornography. Hmm. You know, there's a big difference. Yeah, yeah. And because you understand the person who takes the picture owns you.
Yeah.
Absolutely owns your life. They own you. And then to have the pictures tossed around and passed around, the man who took pictures of me, you know, as I got more and more into really peeling it out of my mind, you know, that dark room we had nothing but photographs. It was just all photographs. He was doing this with other kids too. Every kid believes it's only them.
Yeah.
It's actually hundreds.
And in fact, I've seen some estimates are as high as 350 kids in a lifetime. Mm. And the kids usually do not tell. And the average length of time that they are abused is between 5 and 7 years. So it is terrible. And that what you just said, Michael, about being owned. The position of the ACLU has been, and in fact, when I was on the Pornography Commission during the Reagan administration, the representative from the ACLU, Barry Lynn, who's kind of become a nemesis of ours here, he now heads up Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, he came and defended not the production of child pornography, but the right to distribute it and sell it and do whatever you wanted to with it after it was produced.
Yeah.
So that means that pedophile who took your picture could go sell it legally if the ACLU had its way.
Yeah.
And it I just thank God that's not happened. It's still illegal, but it still gets done.
You know, if people just understood, I mean, like, you know, like how it reacted 50 years ago. To have somebody so demean you in that way, and then hear people who somehow believe people have a right to sell those photos, does not stop people from taking pictures. It just has more and more kids falling into this. And it is something that literally just takes away your life.
Think of all those priests in the Catholic Church. I don't mean to put the onus on the Catholic Church, but the scandal that's occurred in the church has just been unbelievable.
And it's been terrible. But it's not – the church is acting like many families act, Doctor.
Yeah, they hide it.
We have to protect Uncle Bob.
Yeah.
We have to protect Uncle Charlie. And they've always asked us children to carry the burden as if we can carry it better than an adult can carry it. And we can't carry it very well. He ruined our lives. How many of us go into sexual perversions? How many of us go into alcoholism? I'll tell you something else we do. It's not a large leap for a child who's been sexually abused, the male child's been sexually abused, to find it easier to live in the homosexual community than live in the heterosexual community. Why? I'm not going to be ostracized in the homosexual community. I'm going to be accepted there. Even though I may not be a homosexual, people may think I'm a homosexual, and I can live there without being ostracized, where if I go in the heterosexual community and it is brought out that I was touched by a male and you infer from that I am homosexual, I will be ostracized within my own community.
All around the world, the homosexual activist movement is working to lower the age of sexual consent so they have access to kids like you. In the United States and Great Britain, it's age 16. In Canada and Italy, it's 14. In Spain and India, it's 13. And believe it or not, in the Netherlands and the Philippines, it's 12. Imagine a 12-year-old child, prepubescent in many cases, having the legal right to give consent to an adult male usually, who does to him or her what was done to you. And this is an outrage.
It is an outrage.
People tolerate that.
And if that child was sexually abused at 7 or 8, it wouldn't be much for them to give consent at 12.
That's right.
And all of a sudden for it to be legal. Yeah.
And the parents couldn't stop
it. And parents today, I realize we live in a busy society, but parents today are dropping children off in greater numbers at daycare centers. Let me tell you what a child thinks. You drop me off at a daycare center at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'm 5 years old, or I'm 3 years old, or I'm 7 years old, and you don't pick me up till 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Do you think I'm thinking like an adult? Well, I'm here because my parents are just so busy, and this is just the right place to be. I'm thinking to myself, why? Why am I here? Why is Johnny being picked up at 1? Why is Joanne being picked up at 3? Why is Sarah being picked up at 5? Why am I here 12 hours a day? What is wrong with me?
Is that what happened?
That's what a child believes. Child doesn't know any different. And so you start looking for friends. You look for somebody who's going to care about you.
You're carrying all that load of guilt and all those regrets and all those memories. When you took that to the feet of Jesus, what happened?
Oh, when I took it to the feet of Jesus, it just like a whole opening. You just like, let me take that burden. Mm-hmm. And it was and release you from it, but not release me to the point that I couldn't go out and tell you about it, but release me from the anger and the availability to love. I loved Colleen when I married her in 1975. We met on a blind date in 73. We'll have our 28th year of marriage here this month. But when I brought it all to the foot of Jesus, I tell you one thing, it just like we became best friends, even more so, and are more in love today than truly we've ever been. And that's what's great.
That's you tremendous. Know, I would like to write a book sometime on what a good woman does for a man.
Oh.
And
I'll help you.
You found one, didn't you?
Oh, I absolutely did. You know, she came from Nebraska. She was the one of 11 kids. She was number 7, first one born in a hospital. She didn't have indoor plumbing till she was 12, electricity till she was, 13? I was born and raised in Beverly Hills.
What? When did she find the Lord?
She very early on. Her mother was very religious, a woman, and very early on accepted Christ. But on Father's Day of 1985, her and I were baptized together in church. And it was really wonderful to be baptized.
And she was praying for you every day.
Still does. Still does every single day.
You got to bring her here on one of these trips.
I'll bring her here. I will bring her here. Because
offered to let you use the studio for your radio program.
And
it's only conditional if you bring Colleen.
I will bring Colleen.
I want to meet her.
Bring her, yeah.
And you have two children?
Two children, Cameron, 25, and Ashley, who's 20 years old. Cameron works with Colleen at her travel agency, and Ashley's a junior in college and wants to be a teacher.
And the Lord does not let anything go to waste. He is using even this pain in your life now to reach out to others. You have a great desire to help parents prevent this on behalf of their own children. You're speaking, you're opening this side of yourself you probably would rather not talk about, and yet you're out there. Why?
I just feel a pull to, because it's, you know, it affects more than you. It affects everybody around you. I remember when Cameron was 5 and a half, I wanted to send him to boarding school. Why? That's all I knew. That's all I knew. You send your kids to boarding school. When he turned 7, I started to treat him not very well, because that was the age I was when I was sexually abused. And so I overprotective, all kinds of things. And I started to feel, in fact, I started to live through him.
Yeah,
I started to almost get,
right?
Almost be sexually abused again and start to demean him. And I just got on my knees one day. I said some things to him I shouldn't have said and said, God, what have I done? And that began the process. But it is, we take it out on our children. If we don't deal with it, and we don't let God into it to take the burden, then we start taking it out on our children, our wives, our friends. And there's a lot of sexually abused children today who are now grown-ups who sit at home alone every night without a family because they've chased their families away. Mm-hmm. And they don't know why, or at least they don't want to deal with the reason why. And the only way you're going to be able to put it all together is truly by turning to God, who is always there and has always been your friend, even when you thought he wasn't.
Now, there are some obvious questions that parents are thinking today. I would think they're thinking, what do I do? Do I dare send my kid to summer camp? Do I dare get a babysitter to come into my house? Do I dare let my kid go to the mall alone? We're already reading about incredible things that are happening with 13, 14-year-old girls at the mall who want the things that they can't afford and are being used by pimps and others. They have photographs taken of them. That's very, very common. And this is middle class to upper middle class kids that are getting them. So what in the world? They can't divorce themselves from the culture. So how do you protect them?
America today is the Beverly Hills of the 40s and 50s. We children back then who didn't have a lot of time with our parents, nannies and maids and boarding school, you know, we used to get our parents to give us guilt money. Listen, if you buy me something, you'll make up for that time you could have spent with us. And America's doing that today. America's trying to be, instead of parents to our children, we're trying to be their best friends. Well, I wasn't with Johnny last night, so I'll buy him something. And buying your child something does not make up for the love that they're looking for. Children need to know they're loved. Children need to know that you got that time together. It's interesting. I have date night with my wife every single week. Do we have date day with our children where it's just a day for them? The phone doesn't ring or nothing else gets in our way. That is just them. They're the most important thing in the world. How many of us do that? Not many of us do that. We're too busy. I've got to make money. It's all about making money. And our children want to know, what about us? Are we important to you? Children need to know that they're loved.
Now, you've really hit on a very key factor or recommendation. You dare not leave a vacuum in the life of your child.
No.
You know, there are pedophiles out there. They are lurking in your neighborhood. They are in the mall. They are near the schools. They are all over the place. And the first thing to do to protect your children from them is to meet the needs that those kids have that they will go to the pedophile and others to meet if you don't do it.
The man who sexually abused me, I will tell you, treated me like he loved me.
Yeah.
What can I do for you? Michael, I realize in the yo-yo contest that you took second place, but you know nobody got enough points to get that number one yo-yo patch from Dunkin' Yo-Yos. But you know, Michael, you work very hard. And I know you want to impress your parents because they're important people. And second place really isn't a good spot for you. So I'll tell you what I do. You give me that blue second place yo-yo patch. He says, I'm going to give you the first place to take home to your parents. I care about you, Mike. You know what my mom did? My mom took that yo-yo patch and she framed it and put it above my bed. But you know what that yo-yo patch reminded me of?
Yeah.
My mom was proud that I got the number one thing. But in reality, he used that in order to sexually abuse me.
Well, it's a sad situation. You have to teach a child not to trust adults, which is not good either. I mean, we have to do it in this kind of environment, but it's not the ideal thing. You just have to be really careful how you allow one-on-one situations to develop.
I tell you, if you got children who are being mentored by somebody or picked up by somebody after school for a program, and your kid always ends up being the last one dropped off, I'd ask questions. Mm. I mean, I would just ask questions. I remember my mom that night when the man got out of the car, he said, "How about I take Michael to dinner?" And mom said, "Great, have a good time." And I'm sitting in the car seat just going, what's next? And I didn't know I had dinner. We went back to his apartment.
That brings up the issue of talking to your kids, and not only spending the time with them in pleasurable activities, skiing, playing ball, hunting, fishing, whatever it happens to be, but also in going in at night when kids want to talk usually and sit down and just see what's on their heart and mind and try to pull those things out of them. It's loss of sleep. It's not eating right. It's biting the nails.
Bedwetting.
It's bedwetting. Mm. Yeah, it is.
Anger.
That's the most important.
The anger and just going off at what seems to be absolutely nothing. But we need to also trust our children. What happens is so often, let's see what the child has to say. And the child comes home and says, "Mom, Dad, I need to talk." And let's talk. And this happened to me today. And what do we say as parents? Well, let's go back and talk to the teacher, see what the adult has to say. And we always seem to take the adult side over the children. Children still, in many places in the world, I think, are thought more of not as humans, but thought of as an ownership position. Yeah. And it's sad when I see the stories so often of what happens to children, what they're doing with kids today. Young women who just have a relationship will bring a man into their house to live with them and their child, and the man ends up beating the child to death or sticking the child in the closet and starving the child to death because it's more important for me to have this relationship with this man. You know, a relationship with God's much easier and so much nicer.
Well, Michael, I thank God that you've been willing to let him use the pain that you've experienced in your life and that, you're now using it for his cause and his purpose. And I'm sure that there are many parents out there that are looking forward to the book that you're writing now on this subject, and I am too. Michael, this subject of child sexual abuse is so very, very important. You've experienced it. You've been there. And I really do appreciate your taking the time to come here. You have a daily radio program of your own. You're writing this book. You've got many responsibilities. Thank you for coming to Colorado Springs. More than that, I want to thank you for giving yourself to children and especially to the Lord's work, because that's what drives you now, isn't it?
Yeah, it really, really does. I appreciate it. And listen, anytime you want me back here to be on this or to speak to your group, let me know and I can do it.
Wow, what an impactful 2 days of programming we've been listening to here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and if you or someone you know suffers from the residual effects of sexual abuse, we are here to help in whatever way we can. We have articles on our website about dealing with abuse, and we also have people on the phone who can help you find a counselor in your area or just pray with you if you need it. So please visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us, 877-732-6825. We are here for you, and we want to help. Before we go today, I want to let you know what's coming up next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. We will hear from longtime friend of my dad and educational expert Cynthia Tobias as she provides parents with the secret to helping their children succeed in school. Specifically, the tools learned in our next broadcast can help any parent or teacher become more effective in helping a child grasp confusing concepts. Stay interested in lessons and utilize their greatest strengths. That's next time, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless. Thank you for listening today, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Do you want to know what the best decisions that my mom and dad ever made on my behalf was? It was their decision to basically force me, that's right, at 17 years of age, to go to Summit Ministries for a 2-week camp. The truths about God and the world that I learned at Summit went on to shape the rest of my life and has led me to where I am today. Well, I have some exciting news about how you can save a bunch of money on sending your son or daughter to Summit. Summit has agreed to offer a $200 discount to Family Talk listeners if they use the promo code FAMILY15. Again, $200 off by using the code FAMILY15. Don't wait, because this offer ends soon. Go to summit.org today. Again, summit.org to sign up your teenager today.
Hi, everyone. Dr. Meg Meeker here. Are you on the go without much time to log into all of your social media pages? Twitter is a great way for staying informed on the things that matter to you with just a quick look at your phone. Follow Dr. James Dobson, FT, and receive great tips, resources, and information that is important to you in short and simple tweets. Again, that's Dr. James Dobson, capital F, capital T.